I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Today our guest is Dr. Carla Eitel. She's Associate Professor at University of Idaho and the Director of Education at the McCall Outdoor Science School, also known across the state as MOS. Peter, I love the idea of outdoor education, of getting people out there, observing what they see in nature, and just do it right there in the open outdoor space.
It's really hard to think about science education stuck inside a classroom. It has to go outside.
Absolutely. And, there are times when inside the classroom is the way you got to do it for logistic reasons. But when you can be outside and you're actually smelling the environment itself and you're in that place that you're learning about, it's has a lot of potential for inspiration beyond just the learning that you're going to get there.
Right. The connection is fantastic, isn't it?
I love it that way. But first, can we talk about some nature news?
Nature news. All right. We've decided to talk about one of the strangest mammals on this planet, the naked mole rat.
Naked mole rat.
Naked mole rat.
They're cute, I'm sure, to their mothers.
Well, yeah. ugly enough to be cute, I suppose. You know, they're tiny, they're bald, they've got these massive wrinkles, blind, and they've got these massive set of chompers,
that's
buck
right.
teeth. And that's just the beginning of how strange they are. They live in a eusocial underground community. And when we say eusocial, this is what bees and ants live in. You've got a queen, and then you've got your worker critters, and then you've got your warrior or your army critters. And so these are mammals that exhibit insect like social structures, which is crazy. The other one is they have the ability to live in extremely low-level oxygen areas. They live in the ground.
So where do I find these
East
in the
Africa.
World? East Africa.
East
okay.
Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the other one. They've got this high level of pain tolerance. They barely feel any type of pain.
Okay.
And then on top of all of that, they seem to be able to resist most types of cancers.
Wow. Okay. Pretty resilient.
Resilient, but we're not going to talk about that.
What are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about them basically being quite deaf. They can't hear.
They can't hear.
But yet they are insanely loud.
Huh. Okay,
so,
go ahead.
So, yes. They have, researchers have found 6 mutations in their genes associated with hearing loss in humans. But the really important part is they lack cochlear amplification.
And the cochlea is the organ in your inner ear
inner
that allows
ear.
You to hear.
That allows you to hear, yes. And within that, there is a specialized group of cells that are called, hair cells. And this is outer hair cells. This is what gets damaged when we listen to loud music and we go to we go to that concert and you're standing right next to the speakers and they're blasting away and you hear the buzz and all this
and
other stuff.
And those hair cells get damaged in the process.
And they don't regenerate. So as soon as they're damaged or as soon as they die, they're done.
What's that?
Yes, correct. Exactly. And with these naked mole rats, they don't have those cells.
They don't have the cells at all.
They don't have the cells at all because it's so loud inside those tunnels with all their chittering and chattering, they just got rid of them. It would be too loud. And so with those outer hair cells, it would be too amplified. And they just eliminated them so they can hear what they need to hear.
That's bizarre.
You talk about tuning things out.
I think next to slime mold, naked mole rats are this show's favorite animal.
These guys are crazy. And I had the pleasure of working with them early on in my career, and they are absolutely the strangest critter I've ever come across.
Ah, yes. Naked mole rats.
Naked mole rats.
The more we learn. It's wonderful.
Yes.
Well, trivia time for today has to do with the MOS, McCall Outdoor Science School, and how many students have gone through the programs at Moss since it started in 2001. You'll be surprised and amazed and proud as an Idahoan how many students have gone through the Moss Outdoor Program. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk more about it. Stay tuned.
Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org, or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Welcome back from the break. I want to welcome Dr. Carla Idle. She's the Director of Education at the University of Idaho's field school called MOSS. That stands for the McCall Outdoor Science School, located on the beautiful shores of Payette Lake. Thank you for joining us today on The Nature of Idaho.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, so I mentioned in the trivia that, you know, since 2001, I believe McCall Outdoor Science School started. That's a good long time. Tell us about the place. What's the venue like?
Yeah, so we are actually, as you mentioned, we're situated on Payette Lake. And we're actually the University of Idaho field campus, which has been there since 1939. So for a number of years, it was the forestry summer camp of University of Idaho College of Natural Resources. And it's just a fantastic place for people to get outside and really see what's going on in the environment around them. Around the mid-90s, it was no longer really in use as a forestry summer camp, and the vision for providing a place where school students, middle school students, could come and just have this experience of learning in the outdoors really came to be. And the first week of programs was in 2001. I think there was about 60 students that came, and then the next year we had 3 weeks of programs and tripled the number of students, and every year since then we've grown tremendously.
So Carla, tell us a little bit about what you do at Moss and really what brought you there.
That's a good question. So I'm the director of the field campus. And I just oversee our academic program. We've got a number of different things that we do. We work with K-12 students. We've got a graduate program. We do some undergraduate field courses, and then just sort of like outreach in the local community. So my job is to oversee that as an operation. And then specifically, I teach place-based education in our graduate program and advise graduate students. And also teach a course called Field Science Teaching.
Why is that location particularly useful for, as you call it, place-based education?
Like on the one hand, as a place-based education scholar, I would say every place where anybody lives is an interesting place to learn about. This place in particular is really amazing in that we have a lake system that we can study. We've got Ponderosa State Park. We're just at the bottom of the peninsula that where Ponderosa State Park is located. It has a sagebrush meadow and marsh ecosystems. It's got basalt outcroppings. And it's just like really interesting from a landscape process kind of perspective. And then culturally, it's interesting. We're in the ancestral land of the Nez Perce people who have a continued relationship with this place.
Carla, is Moss open year-round? Do students get the ability to experience Idaho in all four seasons?
Yeah, we are open year-round. We've got school-based programs from September through May. And then over the summer, we do our field programs with high school students and with undergrad students. It was actually the first year that we did winter programs. I remember teachers saying, what are you going to do with them in the winter? And winter is actually, I think, one of the most magical seasons for us to be teaching. The snowpack is incredibly interesting to study. And as a state, Idaho is so dependent on the water that comes from our snowpack. So it's just really interesting to think about how much water is available and how the snowpack and water systems are changing. Anyway, it's really interesting. So we teach all year round, and winter is one of our favorite seasons to be teaching outside.
I think that's great. When teachers initially thought, what can you do in the middle of winter? You know, both Leif and I come from the northern regions where there is winter and there's plenty to do and lots of cool stuff to do outside, even though it might be a tad bit cold.
Well, I spent a little bit of time up there during the winter, actually, visiting Ponderosa State Park and that region. And one of the things that's interesting when it's snow covered and a little cold outside, you're forced to tune into different things in your environment differently than you would when there's the clamor of birds and the smells that are very different in the summer and the warmth, maybe the attraction into the water. And in the winter, of course, now you get to walk on ice that's on the what once was water, I guess. And so it's a different experience, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, I mean, I think this is probably true in all seasons, but particularly in the winter, just being comfortable outside becomes a huge part of the curriculum, right? So like figuring out, how do I stay warm? How do I make sure that I have enough energy so that I can keep moving? How do I move effectively through the snow? And all of those concepts then kind of help us build empathy for the animals that are living in the system. And then to think about, like, well, what adaptations the plants have to be able to live here in this environment. And it's really, everything feels like it's part of the curriculum in the winter.
Do you teach the kids how to hunt like fox in the winter? Have them jump up in the air and do a nosedive right into a bank of snow?
Well, I don't know that we explicitly teach that, but it is certainly something I think every group has somebody that will try that.
Excellent. Good for them.
Yep.
So you'd mentioned that there are different age groups that are being taught out at that facility, whether they're sort of the K-12 student or an undergraduate or graduate programs. And of course, it even began as a place for forestry learning. How did the different age groups learn differently, I guess, in a setting like that?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. Part of the answer to that is that our graduate program learning is actually intertwined with the elementary and middle school student learning, in that our graduate students serve as the field instructors for our K-12 program. So both groups of students are learning outside, and they're learning concepts that are related to the landscape and the environment that they're investigating. The graduate students will learn at the graduate level, and they'll learn at the, you know, high concept, a lot of detail level. And then the next week, they're often teaching that same content to a sixth grader. They're having to think about, like, how to make it engaging, how to sort of translate those concepts effectively for the K-12 students. So they're kind of doing, like, they're learning about the place, but then they're also thinking about, how do I communicate most effectively about this place, or how do I engage students in the study of this place to get them as excited as I was last week when I was learning about this stuff.
So what, what is the difference between basically place-based education, what you guys are doing up in Moss, versus a traditional classroom?
No, I mean, the place-based education can happen in classrooms, and it does all over the world. Place-based education just means that the subject matter, the content, the concepts that somebody's learning about are just made local and relevant to what an individual might experience in the place where they live. We add an outdoor component to that so that the majority of what we're doing with our students is outdoors and experiential, so that if we can have somebody experience something firsthand, see it with their own eyes, touch it, hear it, feel it, then we just find that makes learning, first of all, it really provides examples that students can more readily understand. So if you're able to like experience something firsthand, it really helps you deepen your subject matter understanding of that particular concept. Organizing learning around place also, it's like naturally cross-disciplinary or transdisciplinary. So instead of having like math and science and writing separate, if you're studying a place and you're, say, designing an investigation, there's a natural integration of math concepts as well as the science concepts. And then you can write about that same place. So it's just like, it just really lends itself to natural integration of, I guess, what we consider to be separate subject matters, but really are just different ways of understanding a particular place. We also, not all place-based education has to have this component, and we don't always have it in our programs, but it does allow for students, if they see something within their natural system or their community system that they would like to, I don't know, there's something that they would like to address, a change that they would like to see, it naturally lends itself to getting involved in the community where you live. And that doesn't always mean like grand plans to like save the world. It can just be like a pretty small way of just like engaging with your community, providing information or doing some sort of education around it.
So, you know, this is 2020, which maybe will go down in our lifetimes as one of the weirder years, especially in terms of education. I'm in the education field, so is Peter. And, you know, we're all, I think, trying to reconcile how to deal with a world that very much has changed around us in terms of how we reach students and how and what is important to teach to students. So coming back to, you know, the programs that MOS provides and the approach to learning, how is this, how is its approach maybe more relevant today in given the challenges that we have?
Yeah, so this has been a really interesting year for all of us, right? So one of the changes that we have made this year, so typically we have students from across the state coming for residential programs, or we go out to school and do programs across the state. And just given the current situation, that just isn't possible. It's not possible for schools to travel to us or for us to host residential programs. So we've pivoted our program a little bit this fall so that we're actually just working with our local school district to be able to provide outdoor learning for students when they're not in their school building. So our district has gone to a every other day schedule for students. And so on the days that students aren't able to go to their school building, we're providing a program where students can come to us. And we feel great about that opportunity. We're really, really looking forward to the days when schools from across the state can come back and be with us. We hope that that happens soon. We are excited just about the outdoor learning environment in general. You know, there's a lot of evidence that it's a safer place to be, just lower aerosol concentration and easier to have appropriate distance from everybody. So those things kind of make that environment maybe really well suited to the kind of education that we have to do during these times. I think another part of it that I look forward to for myself and for my own children is that I think being outdoors and having access to green spaces and natural environments, there's a lot of evidence that that's just psychologically beneficial for us as humans. So that's just part of what we need. And you don't have to have like the most charismatic natural space. Like, I think any green space will allow for this, but it does just help with that, being able to sort of reset our brains and our have a little bit of like space from the things that we've been worrying about. It's just they can be calming environments. And so I'm excited for that for students who probably have experienced a lot of stress over the last however many months we've been in this world of uncertainty. So generally, this outdoor classroom is thought to be safer, but I also think that it has like psychological and mental health benefits for students.
I can honestly say that every time I feel a little stressed, we've got some wonderful trail systems in and around Pocatello, and that's a great way to decompress and just kind of reset. It's wonderful. So as we look, you know, we know 2020 has been a challenging year, and Moss has been around for 20 years. What do you kind of look forward to in the near future and long term with this program?
I think we look forward to finding ways so that more students can have access to the programming that we do. We're looking at a number of different ways to do that, whether it's through professional development with teachers so that they can bring this type of learning into their own classrooms. And I have to say, there's a ton of teachers across the state that are doing amazing things already. So it would just be us providing some resources to support that. I think it's growing more of the undergraduate field courses that sort of are the history of our place. And I think there's been some movement in the last several years to really bring those back. And it's a huge part of the College of Natural Resources to make sure that students have access to field programming. So we want to be a part of that. We want to make sure that we're really serving the diversity of the population that lives in Idaho and within our region. Making sure that we've got the geographic diversity as well as the cultural and ethnic diversity state represented. Yeah, and then, you know, I think we'll just continue to build programs that are really connected to the landscape where we live and help people connect to the landscapes where they live and understand the human communities and the interactions that those communities have with those landscapes. And I just think we'll continue to do that on into the future.
You know, it is really a lovely place to visit, and just a beautiful region and a stimulating part of Idaho to visit that region in McCall. My son was able to attend a Moss program back a few years ago in the snow, as I do recall, in November, and he had a really enjoyable time, enjoyable experience there. I'm wondering what one of your favorite things is about the place, or a favorite experience that you've had while teaching up there?
I think, it actually comes back to the snow for me as well. I love how surprising it can be for people who haven't grown up in an area that gets a lot of snow, or maybe they just have never really paid attention to, maybe they've grown up with snow but never really thought about it. It's one of those things that often when we start talking about we're going to study the snow or whatever, it's kind of like, well, that can't take very long. It's just kind of there on the, you know. And then you dig into it and you start looking, like literally dig into it, and you start looking at what's there, and you think about like the, you know, how that changes when it's on the land and how that impacts wildlife or plants or you know, people's safety when they're recreating outside. And then you start thinking about how is that connected to, how does this snow connect us to other people throughout the state? Because it's like the water that we share. And then like, how is that connected to other seasons? And all of a sudden there's just like, you know, it's kind of mind blowing how much you can think about and study just from this one little element on the land. And I think that's my favorite thing is just like, when something that initially doesn't seem all that complicated or complex, once you start looking into it, you understand like how incredibly complex and beautiful and interconnected it is. I like watching that process unfold for people.
Well, we thank you for your contribution to education here in the state, Carla. And to that end, can you help us with the trivia question that we started our show with, which is how many students have gone to Moss since its inception in 2001?
So I had to do a little figuring, and the number is really exciting. It's 39,772, which means that this year we're going to be able to say that we've served 40,000 students.
And that is awesome. And I have to mention, too, I also have a connection with the Moss program. Leaf's son went up there, and my first education curator was a graduate of the graduate program up in Moss.
Very cool.
So it's, I mean, you guys are doing fantastic and very clearly reaching all the way across the state of Idaho with your programs. We want to thank, you bet, we want to thank Carla, Dr. Carla Idol today for joining us. And to learn more about the Moss program, please visit the Moss website on the uofidaho.edu/Moss.
The Nature of Idaho is produced at KISU-FM Studios at Idaho State University in Pocatello. Technical assistance and production by Jamin Anderson and Caitlin Hart. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org. Find The Nature of Idaho weekly podcast on iTunes or Google Play Music. For more information, click on the Idaho logo at KISU.org or send email to noidkisu@isu.edu.